Welcome to At a Crossroads with a Naked Podcaster, where we bear it all spiritually and emotionally. I'm your host, Jen Taylor. Each week on the podcast, I'll bring you an inspiring message to support you in designing and creating a vibrant, fulfilling life. Before we dive in, please visit the Facebook community in the links to ask questions that I can answer during this live podcast. At a Crossroads with a Naked Podcaster is for those of you who know that there is more to life and that our true, authentic souls are built for greatness. You are built with strength and love that is meant to shine through in times of conflict and in times of celebration. Welcome. I cannot wait to bear it all with you. In my business, I coach Christian women to step into who they are meant to be, inspired by their purpose and God-given gifts. Find the link in the description to join my private Facebook group. I can't wait to see you there. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome. Today, I'm so excited. I have Ami Quarcone. You knew I was going to stumble over something. Ami Quarcone. Woo! And you've been here before. I'm putting in the first interview here. We'll have everything in the description and the links. It is so good to see you.
Yeah, nice. I'm glad to be here. You've been so popular and so hard to get like nailed down because you got so many cool things going on in your life right now. So yeah, I'm excited for you.
Thanks. I'm excited for you. I want to jump in. We can talk about the stuff that we talked about on the last one for sure, or bridge the gap, but a lot has happened. How long ago was that? 2 years ago?
Yeah, because we have a COVID year, right? So
everything
we think just happened last year was actually the year before then. Yeah, so.
Oh my gosh, how sad. Yeah. So it's been a couple of years. You are a published author.
I am. Yep, that actually happened. That's how I spent my COVID summer was I got a book deal at the very beginning of 2020. And so then as the pandemic was, you know, making its way and really kind of upsetting the balance of our, you know, our normal lives, I was actually writing and finishing up the book. And then it came out actually in April of this year. So then my summer of, you know, COVID time was spent doing some edits and updates and stuff like that. And then just kind of being like everybody else, just hanging out and kind of processing what the world was doing and changing and feeling really grateful for having spent a great deal of time working on my own personal mental health and, you know, and then talking about mental health and the pandemic and then kind of coming up for air a little bit, even though it's not entirely the same world in which you and I first talked and got to, but it's a different world with a lot of still some good opportunities, I do believe. So I have my hopefulness and optimism back here for it. And the book, honestly, came out at the right time, to be fair. Like, you know, it ended up being the right time for the type of thing that I wrote about, unfortunately, I guess.
I think that's the most interesting thing about you and your situation, in my mind, is that you started your podcast. How long has your podcast been going now?
I'm finishing my fourth season. It started the spring of 2018. Yep.
So you've done that for 3.5 years and you really became... I love the twists and turns, how you start at one place and end up like not at all where you thought you were going to. You really dove in hardcore to mental health, which I love. So it's interesting where we have similarities and where they are different. However, you did a lot with mental health and then the book started and then COVID happened. So I'm really hoping we can dive in a little bit. And we didn't really pregame at all because we've talked before. And we both have podcasts. So how things have changed mental health wise during this pandemic, because I definitely have an opinion on that. And the fact that you were writing the book before it started, and I want to dive into that first. I think you started writing your book pre-pandemic, but having that during the pandemic, let's dive into that.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things, you know, the book addressed, The Fearless Woman's Guide to Starting a Business, it was about if I could go back in time and I could have conversations with myself, but also any woman that was getting ready to start on her entrepreneurship journey, what I found to be really the most important things that contributed to self-sabotage, failure, and success in life. And it's not what we think we need to focus on and worry about. And, you know, as a business coach over the last 5 years, you know, I spent time talking with people. They'd come to me with wanting to know how to do marketing and they'd ask questions about that. And, you know, and I found myself pre-pandemic and even pre-mental health journey helping solve those problems, but still not seeing people able to continue with the next steps of implementation. And it was all the mental health stuff that was getting in the way. And it was what got into my way professionally. So you then come in with a pandemic where people are now, you know, dealing with a collective trauma worldwide, life or death decisions, personal rights, and, you know, everything around, you know, this, as well as, you know, let's also not forget, you know, the profound imagery and also the transactions that happened with the murder of George Floyd and how that integrated into, you know, a lot of people experiencing direct trauma and vicarious trauma through that. But the thing that actually also happened was that 3 million women were forced or left the workforce because of what happened systemically because of the pandemic. Women that had to go home to take care of family members, that had to deal with taking care of school. I know many women that retired because of the health concerns of being exposed to COVID and it being a concern. So here we are with this mass exiting of women from the workforce. And then what I remember from the recession back in 2011 was that when people were forced out of their jobs and that insecurity of their profession, many people got into entrepreneurship at that moment because they were like, man, if that can happen to me once, it could happen again. And so the timing of the book was not just about the mental health part. Like, what do we need to know about ourselves and how well we're, you know, how we handle resiliency and adversity and all the things that go on in our lives. But then it was providing a toolbox for women at the right time to say, I'm not going back to a regular job, which we've seen in the workforce. I'm going to start my own business. And now they have something that helps them understand the mental health of their lives in the present condition, as well as giving them skills to start their business. And I was like, man, that's, again, perfect storm.
Yeah.
You know, a book at the right time for that. And I didn't plan that. You know, that just all happened.
Well, that's the even better thing, because you've had the podcast for 3.5 years. You work so specifically with, like, yeah, there's marketing and branding and pretty colors and all that, but what about your mental health type? Like, you are diving deep into mental health, which was awesome. And starting the book beforehand, that's why I was like, it's such interesting timing that it all, you got to work on your own mental health and the book and help other people. The pandemic has been not fun. Out of that, some interesting things, like, I've been working online freelancing and working from home for 5 years. Mm-hmm. So I was like, everyone join my party. This is great. People didn't know what Zoom was. This is what it's like to work without pants, you know, like legitimately, this is fun. And it changed the dynamic so much. It gave people the courage. Like, I don't know how much time there is left. I don't know what next thing could happen. I don't know what life's going to throw at me next. And although there was so much stress in that, like you said, I mean, even though I worked from home, I still had kids home trying to do distance learning, which was awful, and figuring it all out. And I think I was in a pretty decent situation. So a lot of the really interesting opportunities came up. I love that it has highlighted what people's mental health was pre-pandemic in the way they were doing things then, and how could they change them? Mm-hmm. I'm so proud of you for the book coming out. I'm just so excited about that.
Thank you.
How has it changed your direction, the book in general? And we don't know, book without a pandemic or with a pandemic, because we don't have the choice to do that. But how did it change your direction?
In a really big way, one thing that I, you know, kind of the pandemic helped reveal to me personally, but then also just, I'm, you know, I've always been a curious person studying, you know, what I see out in the world and kind of, you know, trying to figure out how to solve the problem, was the importance of the work-life experience on our mental health, just as an individual, but also its contribution to the continuation of childhood trauma. And it going on to the next generation, and where right now in the workplace, because we basically have dismantled the old way of doing business that we've been doing for like about 100 years since the dawn of the Industrial Revolution. And then you can think of like post-World War II and, you know, this whole construction of what work looks like, is that work is a significant contributor in many people's lives to their existing trauma that they have. It's either re-triggering past traumas, Or it is causing stress, and that stress then bleeds into home. And then that becomes a contribution sometimes to another generation of children dealing with neglect, maybe abuse, maybe emotional inconsistency, financial scarcity, and on and on. And so what I brought out of this was, one, I love business. And I love the opportunity as a vehicle, especially for women, to become financially independent through starting their own businesses or gaining some more confidence in their careers so that they can actually take care of themselves and their families if they want to. But at the same time, also being able to have businesses recognize by seeing this, they call it the great resignation, right? That all the people that have just said, no, I'm not going back to that old way of doing it. And now businesses having to understand, why did people make those decisions? And a lot of times it comes down to really not feeling like when we showed up to work, we were safe, either physically safe or psychologically safe. And that's where a trauma-informed perspective then in leadership and how we do business is sometimes the right solution and how we move forward out of a collective trauma, but then also how we get to take an examination of how we've done business in the past and realize that how often were toxic work environments the reason why we had anxiety and depression. Was a toxic work environment the source of, you know, us coming home depleted or being a workaholic and being, and I'll say neglectful, not in the sense that we meant to do that, but sometimes as a parent, we become neglectful of our other things that we have in our life, because if we neglected our job, well, then there's no money to pay our bills. And we can't live without paying rent or mortgages and buying groceries and utilities. I mean, we see that, right? Homelessness is not an option for people. And in the pre-pandemic life, we had to choose our job sometimes at the expense of our family. And the pandemic flipped that around to where family became like, I have to leave my job to take care of my family. And now we're back to trying to figure out how do we do both of those things. And so that's where I've been working with people now, more on that.
I remember being a single mom like 15 years ago and having a job that I hated. The guy would ask me like, what panties was I wearing under my skirt? Like, right. Mm-hmm. And now I'm confident and I knew that wasn't okay. And I called him on it and I stood up for myself. I couldn't leave the job until I found something else, though, because I had to feed my kids. And absolutely, as a single mom working, because money is a prerequisite to survive, 100% it was at the expense of my kids, and 100% it was at the expense of my mental health. There's not even a question about it. And I think when you've been a woman in that situation, a man in that situation, I mean, my husband's job is tremendously stressful and he was an essential worker, so he hasn't lost work, but it's not a healthy, fun place to be. And knowing like you're kind of stuck there. So mm-hmm. It did flip the script. We don't have to get into media. One thing that's coming out is that people don't want to work. Oh, we have all of these people in America and they're just lazy, don't want to work. And that is crap for that. Like everything I've seen and everything that people I talk to, everyone wants to work. It has to look a little bit different now. And we are less tolerant of some things, but we have a strong desire to work. And in those jobs where it is healthy, it works around your family, you can do it from home, it's flexible, the competition for those jobs is so high and the pay has gotten less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's, and in some industries, it's even increased, you know, and actually this is what I do like outside of this. Like, so I work with organizations and I actually work with bridging people. Like I work with people and businesses. So that's the, you know, the really firm direction and looking at bringing in people into companies and, you know, in some places the competition for pay has actually gotten higher because of the scarcity, you know, that there aren't enough people that are actually looking for that type of a job. And so there is a weird inflation that's going on in some industries where people are trying to pay less because they're trying to pass on the cost to you as the employee. Like, well, you know, I don't have to pay rent on the building or, you know, whatever those other costs are. So therefore I should be able to pay you less because you don't have to commute anymore. And, you know, and then there's the discussion of like, yeah, but, you know, do you know how much toilet paper I had to buy in the last year and a half working from home? If you understand that that was a cost of doing business was to be here. and that was a real, you know, that was a real expense or my internet costs, you know, and all those things that we aren't being paid. So there is that debate that's going on. But the thing that I think that a lot of people are missing is, you know, when business is operated in a vacuum of where you're not a whole human being, when you show up to work, leave your personal stuff at home, and then no accountability for how we engaged with each other, and not this awareness. This is the other thing, is that I bring this awareness of, you know, we bring our junk to work, and it actually does influence how we lead in our interpersonal relationships and our communication habits that we've picked up. And if we have trauma or dysfunction in our background, or a lack of positive, secure models for how to do that, that is how we actually show up at work. And when we don't know that, then we end up re-triggering or re-traumatizing or creating trauma for people. And then we don't hold ourselves as leaders accountable to the consequences of that. We're just like, you know what? It's a work thing. Don't take it personally. This is just work. Well, how are you not supposed to take a degrading comment, or undue stress or burden or shame or guilt, you know, to motivate you at work? How are you not supposed to take that personally and not have that come into home? And I think employees, like you said, are just like, I want to work, but now that I've been able to detox from some of these cultures and some of these restrictions that don't seem as necessary as what we believed they were, I want to come back, but I don't want to come back the way that it was. And I think that it's actually, you know, as disruptive as it is to employers, it's actually just this beautiful moment for all of us to actually go, well, then let's think about how we get results and do it in a way in which we can all be humans and acknowledge it. But, you know, there's a lot of interpersonal skills that are required for that kind of a business that when none of us were taught, or very few of us were ever actually taught, right? We only know what we know, and that's asking us to change how we lead and how we communicate is really hard. And so it's taking people to teach us how to do that differently so that we can all get back on a track, not in the direction we were going before, but in a different way in which we all feel safe, because leaders don't even feel safe leading a new organization where they have to be accountable for, you know, hey, don't be a jerk at work. You can't talk to people like that. You know, this is beyond our normal discrimination and racism and bullying that we've decided that we can't tolerate anymore. It's like a deeper level of leadership that people are uncomfortable with right now. And that's normal because we're human.
Well, yeah, it's uncomfortable to change. It's also uncomfortable to have to uncover what lies beneath, because I mean, I love that. If there's trauma there, that needs to be dealt with for you to continue to have a different result. Eventually that trauma is going to continue to resurface. So the other thing I think has been interesting is that although a lot of people realize how much, one, they didn't need a building, and two, they enjoyed working from home, and three, that they're the people that either the employers are noticing and the employees are noticing together, that they actually are more productive when they can go switch their laundry and grab something for lunch and change a diaper. And like how, and there are a lot of us that knew this before that, but to describe it, you know, and once everybody was forced, it's like, so do you need that building? Where, you know, you those employers can make more money or save more money on their overhead and possibly shouldn't be trying to bring the amount that they're paying people down. Like, if you're saving all this money, shouldn't I get a raise? And if I am more productive at home and you kind of have me a little bit more on call outside of business hours because it's so convenient, you know, I know my daughter is almost 30 and she works in finance. And at first it was like, oh my gosh, how do you do this legally? Mm-hmm. All these people working from home. And then they figured it out. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, yeah, the office is open somewhat, but I want to keep working from home. Mm-hmm. Like, this has been great. Mm-hmm. And I'm more productive and I can do a little extra here and there and work a little bit longer hours. It's easier because I'm already home. So they're getting the best version of employees in a lot of situations and a lower overhead. And so I think that there was that learning curve of how to do things legally or how to do things differently, and then how to balance those of us at home that have family and are now, like, my daughter's never gone back to school and I don't want her to. We're not distance learning, we're homeschooling, and this is year two. So there have been some massive shifts for people. And I hadn't even thought about it from the employer perspective, just the employee perspective, what people are going through. So yeah, big change, huh?
It is. Yeah. And it's actually, you know, like I said, I think if we've been working in mental health and we've been entrepreneurial in our nature, again, it's the right time to have these conversations. And so acknowledge it. And I think that it also, again, it works in with a lot of the diversity and the, the equity and the inclusion conversations as well, is, you know, a lot of bad things had to happen at the right time for us to really be able to hit rock bottom in many cases and in many ways to be forced to figure out how to come out of this entirely differently. And if, we've had incidences, unfortunately, as we know, that are like the George Floyd murder, that didn't do enough to catalyze, the movement the way that it needed to do, or raise the awareness of anti-racism and policies and the systemic racism and just how far it really had been affecting so many of our friends and neighbors and people of color in our country and in the world. That if that, again, on top of the stuck at home because of a pandemic and forced to look at all of these inequities, they're all tragic, but yet the opportunity out of that is, without all of that to happen, we wouldn't be able to sit here and think about what can we do better and healthier for all of us. And like you noted, and still be able to achieve economy, business is not bad. People do bad things with businesses, but a healthy economy can be, is vital, because we do have an exchange of dollars for goods and services. But that's not new. That's been going on for a long time, and we don't barter, but some of us still do barter. So we have to figure out, how do we actually do that? And we also have to recognize that jobs are in ways for us to sometimes fulfill purpose. So figuring out this balance between our entire human experience with a profession, now is the time to be able to do that, and definitely, be able to do that. And we have a great opportunity to figure out how that all comes together for most of us. But there is a lot of cerebral work, again, that we don't have skills for that part of it. Culturally speaking, we haven't taught mental health or understanding brain health in the way that, and I use this analogy all the time, you and I both went through school and we had a nutrition class that taught us at a very young age the food pyramid, what foods were good and bad. We took PE classes to teach us that physical health and physical activity was important, but we've never had an integration yet into our educational system and in our life system that teaches us, well, how does brain architecture work? How do emotions actually develop? They're not mysteries. They are neuroscience as well. They are biology as well. And how do we learn the skills that we learn that we then need as adults? And the discussions start to happen now. What should we really be teaching kids? Addition and subtraction? Or should we be teaching them how to do self-re-regulation? If we're going to teach about the body, let's teach ourselves, how does our sympathetic nervous system work? And how do we re-regulate emotions? And what do we do when we experience? How do we name emotions? And I think all of that's also going to come out of this process of teaching parents, as well as our children in our educational system, that seems to be a more important skill sets that we've seen, kind of arise out of this moment. And now is the time even for that, as uncomfortable as it is for people. I think we're primed to learn that. At least that's what I've been finding. Some business leaders are ready to learn, how do I understand mental health, and how do I create a culture that is sensitive to all of our needs and allows us to be successful businesses and be good community stewards to the people that, are in my, in my realm that I take care of as their employer, so that we are doing no more harm to the community at large. We're not sending parents home stressed and, to a place where they have to do all the laundry at night. They have no time to do that. They got to take care of this and take care of that, and have no resources left for their family or themselves. How do we unpack that and do that better?
And you did, the leaders of these businesses, whether they're the owners or the managers or the bosses, they're not exempt from their trauma and bringing that to work too. So I would think if everyone as a collective is noticing work and mental health and it's not good, so are they. Mm-hmm. And if they've got to want it to change too, just as much as the employees have got to want it to change, I would think, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We're equal in that, at least.
Yeah. And honestly, we've all experienced that as well. Let's just go back pre-pandemic and we can think about how we had a few good managers and a few good coworkers, but the owner of the company didn't want any, old school. There's a lot of words that we've used to describe leaders that don't show a willingness to be able to be growth minded and to change and to kind of shift to what Bill George called authentic leadership or vulnerable leadership, as Brené Brown, you know, talks a lot about. And when you see that, when you know trauma, like you and I have been studying this, like, right, for our own benefits, as well as to being able to serve other people, you realize that the inability to shift and change and embrace that compassionate view is a trauma response in itself. Denial of trauma is a trauma response. So when we look upwards and upstream to leaders that have difficulties with understanding it, we have to understand that that also comes from a sense of fear, a fear that they don't know the answer. And so the answer is going to be, we're staying with what we have because I know that. And I, you know, maybe I'll acknowledge it's wrong, but I don't know what to do differently. And it feels unsafe for me as a leader to change the way I lead because of, again, the trauma of being wrong, the trauma of not following what you were supposed to be doing, the trauma of doing something different, being punished for it by parents and caregivers and the school system or whatever it could be. So you're 100% right. Everybody has it. Everybody's dealing with it, but the leaders are the parental role in our companies.
Yeah.
Right. They're the ones that actually, you know, we look to them and we don't have trust in our organization if we can't look up and see and trust our leaders in the companies. And so it has to start with them and then work through the company. It's not going to be as successful coming from the bottom up because what we're seeing is the bottom up. If you don't change, I leave. That's how it comes from the bottom up is that attrition, quitting. You know,
and there has been a lot of that. I mean, it's like a mass exodus. But I don't feel like, I personally don't feel like it's because people don't want to work. It's just that they don't want to work in that environment any longer. Yeah. And we've seen a different way. We've seen kind of the other side or the possibility of how things could look. And we don't want to settle for less. Are you seeing a lot of you are seeing a lot of people, owners and managers who want to make these changes though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Their businesses will fail.
Right. They will. There's still some, you know, again, there's still some resistance. And again, my approach with that resistance is coming from fear. It's not coming from, they feel like they're blind to what's going on. It's just that not having skills to be able to do it differently than what they already know. So you kind of have to go there, but there has been, you know, there is a lot of talk about like, well, what does mental health look like? And also, what do we have to do differently? And what do I have to examine in myself that could be preventing us from being able to do this in this company or this business and organization? So it is happening. The other part that we have to look at too is, you know, some people have left the working world because they no longer trust the system is going to take care of them when they need it. That's where the entrepreneurship leg comes into this. You aren't going to be able to coax everybody back into the working world because you just demonstrated, you and it, not you personally or, you know, the business leaders, but this world demonstrated that there is an insecurity in working for other people. And for some people, that insecurity is greater than the fear of starting their own business. So they're going to go start their own business. And we saw this in the recession. We saw that in when there was a real estate bubble that caused a decline in construction activities. Architects, you know, in my area in Seattle in particular, construction workers and architecture firms were just laying off by the thousands in just the Seattle area alone. And some of those architects just decided to open up their own firms. Contractors opened up their own boutique firms. And we were able to rebuild the construction economy around here based on small firms, not the bigger firms, because they were like, listen, I can't do this again. I can't have like another 10-year cycle put me out of my job. I'm going to take my own destiny and financial security into my own hands. And so the great resignation is also people going, I'm done with this and I'm going to do it. If you won't build me a place where I feel like I can belong and I can get around your purpose, then I'm going to build it for myself. And that's the other part. So the talent pool is declining because of that there. Is that laziness? Are you kidding me? That's a spirit of entrepreneurship. That's audacity to say, I'm just going to take my own destiny into my own hands and I'm going to go for it. And I applaud that. Like there's nothing wrong with that. That's amazing.
And how, I mean, yeah, I've seen a lot of that too. People deciding that if they're going to do it, now is the time. And there are more resources for them in order to do that. I just find that through like the SBA has been one, and that's a big one, but there have been the stimulus and potential grants. There have been the opportunities kind of needed. You're right about the perfect storm. And how is that changing people?
Yeah. Well, it gives them access to things that they didn't have before. You know, it used to be, you know, one of the biggest costs of starting a business was a brick and mortar operation, right? You had to get your hands on real estate. You had to pay rent. You had to do all of that. But this digital virtual economy that we were all pushed into changed. You know, we can set up a store and not have a store anymore. So we can go to Shopify and we can actually do fulfillment. We can drop ship directly from a vendor in Asia, Europe, you know, from South Carolina, wherever we get our source, and have it go directly to the consumer. We've got shipping channels. You know, right now the shipping channel is a little bit funky because of, you know, a lot of COVID restrictions. But for the most part, we have access to being able to match up customers with service providers or goods providers that didn't exist pre-COVID. So now that is like, well, why, you know, I don't have to go find a bill, you know, a business on Main Street and pay $2,000 to $3,000 a month in rent. I can actually do it in my garage. I can run it from my house. I can actually network with people like you. You've worked as a, you know, in the virtual world, servicing companies everywhere. You know, they can connect with people like you and hire you out of Nevada to Seattle, and we can work together. Yeah. So now these virtual companies have made it easier. Whereas before, the privilege of being able to have the money up front to do that didn't exist for a lot of people. And so you are seeing people take advantage of that thanks to, you know, what has happened with the pandemic. So a lot of would-be entrepreneurs that had been blocked out of entrepreneurship because of lacking financial resources now have, it's actually equalized access in many ways to a lot of things that other people couldn't access before.
I love what I'm seeing coming out of that space too. A lot of it. I mean, there, people are really, really being creative and thinking out of the box. And that's been really astounding to watch. What about their mental health? And I want to talk more about what people can do, whether they're working or an entrepreneur, like in this change, what are the greatest things that they could do to help their mental health in whichever situation they're in?
Yeah. But,
so what about mental health of the entrepreneurs? Let's start there because we're talking about that.
Well, one of the biggest things that you'll see when you start up a business is that you're not going to hit a home run your first at bat, right? And so when I'm engaged in a lot of social media activity and I'm in a lot of these different groups, I watch a lot of women get defeated right from the beginning because they want all the skills and they want all the success right from day one. And that just doesn't happen. And unfortunately, social media can actually be a negative influence on that because it's a constant push of, you know, buy this from me and you'll be, you know, a millionaire in 6 weeks or 30 days or whatever it is. And, you know, there's a scarcity, you know, when we're in a trauma mindset, many of us still are, you know, and I say that as a we, because it's not the world we knew before. Chaos and uncertainty can be triggering. And so even if we feel strong and fine, we probably still have a little bit of, like, you know, some swirl and fog going on from experiencing this shift and adapting to it. And so sometimes when people are trying to solve a pain right away and they aren't getting that satisfaction right away, it can cause a lot of negative feelings about how well they're doing or whether or not, you know, the imposter syndrome is something that we hear about, like, you know, I'm just not good enough for this. I can't actually do this. This is really hard. And a lot of that is because we've set such a high expectation on what we should be able to do right away, because what we want is we want to solve the pain we have now, and we can't imagine it going one more day.
Yeah.
So, you know, usually what I like to recommend is inventory your safety right now. Like, sometimes when we grow up with trauma, we think we're more unsafe than we really are. I've shared this experience with my financial conditions before, you know, back in the past, where it was like, I felt like there was never enough money, but then it's like, if you do an evaluation, there is, but it's just a belief that there's not enough.
Yeah.
So sometimes we hold a belief that we're in pain, and then that pain then guides us to make bad decisions. And I say that our pain advisor is the worst business advisor we can ever have. And so if you're going to start this, find out where you are. Are your base needs met? And you're going to have to reassure yourself many times over, I'm actually safe. I'm okay. I'm safe and I'm okay. And that helps calm your nervous system down, so that as you give yourself the time and patience you need to learn new skills and realize that it does take time to learn something new. People that make it look easy learned a lot going up and down, and entrepreneurship is going to be an up and down roller coaster. There is no such thing as an overnight success. So I think that's one important thing. And then I think the other part is that we actually Our nervous systems regulate with presence of other people. So having a network of people, maybe it's one person that you can like that understands that can mentor you or guide you, or maybe it is a Facebook group with a lot of people supporting each other. You know, find a community in which you can get some support. For you, since you work with a lot of Christian women, you know, churches are great places of sources of community support. You will need that because you're going to feel bad sometimes, but yet having some a supportive network behind you, reminding you that you're worth it, that what you want is worth it, will actually build your resilience and being able to keep you going, you know, as it gets more difficult. And I think those two things are really, two great places to start in terms of your mental health and giving yourself time to take a break and breathe. And I can't recommend physical activity enough, or something that makes you laugh and smile. I know you're a runner. I'm a runner, a walker, spinner, biker. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's a privilege. You know, not everybody has has the physical ability to be able to do that. But if you can, it is some way of being able to balance our body with our brain because they are connected together. And also, if you're working from home, it's really easy to get stuck in the chair and not leave unless you have to cook something or make coffee or change the laundry. And so, one of the benefits of working from home is to be able to go outside, take advantage of being able to do that. And it'll actually help reset your brain and get you back into creativity and flowing again. And you have to be a pendulum. You have to go back and forth. You can't just pin it up there at one level all the time. Go ahead and be okay with being lazy sometimes or doing something for your own mental health.
Yeah, we had pajama day last week.
Cool.
When you wake up and it's like, yeah, for whatever reason, it's just pajama day today. It's a mental health day. Mm-hmm. And that's totally fine, but not doing pajama day every day. Right. And I geek out on the science of the brain just like you do. And I remember reading an article, if you can get outside for 20 minutes away from cars, preferably, just taking a walk for 20 minutes and how much your brain chemistry changes. And I've known a guy for years that I ran with, and he was in the military. He was in one of the EMPs went off near him, and he had some traumatic brain injury and stuff like that. And he got overweight. He stopped working out. He was on all these medications. And his doctor finally said, go for walks every day. Like, that's what I want you to do. And he got off of 7 out of 8 medications. And the one he didn't was for his asthma that he'd been on since he was a kid. Like, he was on high blood pressure medication. Wow. And I loved running with him and really talking to him about what it was like to get the injury, where his headspace was at, how bad he got when he was at his worst with everything, the PTSD, the high blood pressure, just everything. And then you get overweight, he starts having blood sugar problems, he's looking at pre-diabetes. Like, it just became this horrible compound interest. And all he did was he started walking 20 minutes a day, and then he started walking more, and then he started walking faster, and then he started running and was on no medication. Mm-hmm. And he was such a testimony to me of that science. Not that I think it isn't correct, but to actually watch someone who's gone through it, who's been so sick, like didn't know if this guy would talk again from the brain trauma he had from that EMP in Afghanistan, to running and telling me his story. Mm-hmm. And so I agree with you. I do not think enough. We just like, please just sit outside, even if it's cold, please just go outside in your backyard, because it makes such a difference in the chemistry of your brain, such mm-hmm. a difference. So yeah, you don't have to be a runner. You don't have to be fanatic. You don't have to go at 5 o'clock in the morning. You just have to get your butt out of your chair and outside. So I think that's the single biggest thing that we can do for ourselves that costs nothing, is to walk outside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yep. You don't need anything, just your shoes. Just put your shoes on and your coat on and walk out your door.
Yeah.
That people don't do that they can do that makes such a huge impact.
Yep. Yeah. Like you said, of all the things there, it's definitely, and like I said, I recommend it if you can. If you physically can't do it, there's other ways to get endorphins and dopamine and serotonin going through your body. But our brain and our body are linked. It's not like this is a mushy nugget up here and that's its own little thing. Our neurotransmitters are in our gut. Our adrenal hormones are on top of our kidneys, our breath, our lungs, the hormones go throughout our entire body. So taking care of the body actually ends up stimulating the brain and vice versa. And it can be a really great way of dealing with overwhelm, which will happen in business. You'll get overwhelmed by all the things you have to do or can't do, or feel like you're not good enough to do, or, you know, whatever the, you know, your source of overwhelm can be. And just changing your activity to do something like walking will just get your brain to focus on something else. And it's just, it's like hitting the reset, like shutting the phone off and on and the computer off and on. Like a walk can do that. And then on top of that, it gives you the benefit of the endorphins and the dopamine and the adrenaline and all the good chemicals to counteract the cortisol, you know, that's been going. So, yeah.
I want to dive into your mental health journey and how, I mean, I think through this pandemic and writing of the book and that has helped, but I know it's also hard because when I wrote my book about my trauma growing up, it was definitely cathartic and intensely difficult. So let's talk about where you came from a little bit, because we talked about that a lot in the first podcast with the kids and stuff like that. You are the most outspoken about where you were at emotionally as a parent. And I am so thankful and proud of you for that. And then how it's gone since then. I mean, in the last 2 years, yeah, there was the writing of the book, and how did that affect you positively and negatively? But everything else that's happened in the past couple of years too. Your kids are getting older.
They are. They're growing. you know, it has been a journey. And for people that haven't heard the other episode, you know, I was a part-time parent. I mean, I got overwhelmed by motherhood and didn't know what was going on in my life. And that was like the coming apart moment in 2009, 2010. And a part of it was due to business. Part of it was due to a toxic work environment, the recession. And then also being triggered by motherhood and not even knowing that that was what was happening at the same time. And so then I had this hiatus of 7 years where I was the weekend parent. I wasn't the full-time mom because when my kid's dad and I sat down, it was really obvious. I did not have tools to handle this and we didn't know why. And so it felt really, you know, it's a word I use that some people have shamed me for, but it was a relief to not be on call as the, mm-hmm. as the solo parent, you know. And I, instead of, you know, feeling like, which I felt like it was freedom for 7 years, but in reality, I was actually sinking further into the darkness of not understanding what the trauma was doing to me and how it was really the saboteur in my life. That relationship I was in for the next 7 years turned out to be an abusive relationship. I was in a codependent situation and it was emotionally and financially abusive. And it would only be after coming into 2017 and having that relationship fall apart because at that point, my kid's dad no longer wanted to be the custodial parent. And I was ready to say yes, even if I felt like I didn't have the skills. There was no way I was saying no to my kids. You know, there was a part of me that was beginning to change and it was probably related to the abuse that I was going through. But in the course of 2017 is when this mental health journey came about, because as I was sitting there in 2017, I realized it was like 7 years earlier, like losing relationship, losing business, life falling apart. Ami, you're the person, it's in like the consistent thread, the common denominator in all of this. And so starting that mental health journey was really the first thing was it was an act of motherhood. I recognized that while trying to figure out and unpuzzle, you know, this thing called my life, I saw that the unresolved trauma, the influence of, you know, my upbringing and how that made me into some of the great things I loved about myself, but some of the things that were contributing to my self-sabotage, and in particular, the kinds and quality of people I constantly drew into my life around me, that I had to change that. And if I didn't change that, I was going to be passing it down to my kids. And if I could stop what was going on with them sooner than later, then I could hopefully spare them being 40 some years old, completely broke, miserable, and feeling like you were cursed, you know, and that's how I felt. And that's what began the journey of One Broken Mom and sharing that awareness building and therapy and everything that I was learning along the way with other parents and adults, you know, in order to be able to say like, let's all be in this together. Let's see if we can actually, you know, change the course of our future for ourselves as well as for our kids. And now since then, what's happened is it's still a journey, right? You never learn how to heal completely. What you learn is something that I learned from Lindsay Gibson, one of the authors and therapists that I've had on my show a handful of times that I consider a friend now, which is you don't ever learn and suddenly become healed. You just learn new habits of self-awareness and knowing that some things will never change in terms of our response, our automatic response to it. Like, it's always going to be a red flag, but we learn how to not follow it. We learn how to bring in a present mind to it and go, yeah, okay, so that caused my heart to just jump there a little bit. That's fun. But I don't have to actually respond in fear or anger or whatever to this. I'm going to put a pause button on it and realize that's just a memory. I'm safe now. I can actually make a different decision. And as a parent, you know, there's a lot of work that goes on every day. You know, having all this mindset is great, but at the same time, I still get triggered by motherhood and parenthood. But I now know how to show up in ways and how to be able to not be a perfect parent, but just be a more human parent. And at the same time, be mindful, you know, of what is it that my kids really need, and to be able to know I can reflect back to what I needed. So what do they need? But also not parent them the way I needed it, but to actually see them as individual humans and recognize their autonomy and their individuality. And to know that if they need something different than what I needed, that that's what they need. And I need to be okay with that. And I need to show up with that. And so the parenting part is like, it's still, we're still in the surgery room. We don't know how the outcomes are going to be. I'm crossing my fingers and hoping for the best, but I do feel really proud of us as a family. Like, we're not perfect and we have our problems, but I do feel like it's a, there in many ways, there's a lot of peace in our house that I've never known in my life. There's a lot of awareness and understanding of each other, and the dialogues and conversations we have are better than I could have ever imagined in terms of EQ, right? Like, understanding and giving space to each other for who we are, you know, as angry as we are sometimes and as sad as we are sometimes, just knowing that that's also all this about this life journey, you know, and it's a human process, and realizing what's really important, you know. And I think that there are skills that will matter more to my kids in life than whether or not they're getting A's in their class or they were on the track or football team or any of the other things that seemed really important to me when I was growing up. And that feels good. I feel like it's nice to be, feel peaceful and feel safe. That's a big thing when you go through trauma and you've lived through a lot of experiences, is I realized that how awesome it feels to just finally feel safe for the first time in the, you know, ever, you know, and to be okay with that. And to know that that power is in my hands. Like, it doesn't rely on having a partner or a boyfriend or husband or anything like that. Like, my kids don't give me my safety. I have my own sense of safety. And that's a thing for, you know, for trauma survivors to get to. And I feel good. Yeah.
I love that. I think the best thing I did in parenting was admitting that I just, like, I'm an imperfect person trying to wing it here too. And I do react sometimes, and I can apologize for that. It doesn't make me feel okay about it. However, I can say, look, when you do this, all my triggers happen. And then I'm not the best version of myself. And for that, I'm sorry, because that's my part in this, but just teaching them that you're human and apologizing and being okay with the fact that you're human and you're apologizing was probably, and that you, like, you don't have it figured out and we all get triggered, was probably one of the best things I did as a parent. Mm-hmm. It didn't make my imperfectness okay. It made it understandable. At least it bridged a gap, I think. So I was always so proud of you of saying, I was relieved that I didn't have my kids. I know people have shamed you. I think the people that want to shame you are the people that are struggling with that own feeling in themselves, right? And can't admit it. And people ask me how I don't have empty nest syndrome. I'm like, 'cause I love it when my kids leave. Like, I don't have empty nest syndrome because my identity wasn't so tied up in my kids that I didn't know what to do with myself when they left. I maintained my identity. I thought it was very important. I am not their friend. I am their parent, and I maintain my own identity. So when they left, I'm still me here, just without them. I'm excited and I'm happy and I'm proud of them. I'm always their mom. I'm always here for them. I'm the safety net. I love it. And that is the first point in time that I think you can start to create a friendship with your kids, is when they're becoming older, autonomous, they have their own lives, and you don't have to parent them, although you're always their parent, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was super important to me. I think admitting that you're just a train wreck was the best thing that I could ever do. Mm-hmm. And also, when I had to make hard decisions and I stuck to it, telling them later, telling them that was one of the hardest things I've ever done. When my daughter had a suicide attempt and I caught it and I dropped her off at a mental health facility for 10 days, even though I had all the training, I was trained to train people in how to deal with suicide. It was not happening in my house. I knew I could not be present the level that I needed to help her if she had another attempt. And I knew the statistics, and I dropped her off for 10 days and she was screaming and sobbing, and I peeled her off me and I shoved her to the nurse and he grabbed her and held her down and I walked away. That was the hardest thing that I've ever done in my parenting journey. But I think admitting that when I talked to her the next time and I said, this is the hardest thing I've ever had to do. The hardest thing I've ever had to do is admit that I wasn't enough and you needed more and I was going to get it for you. And with you begging me and crying, I walked away. The hardest thing I ever had to do. I had an absolute breakdown in the parking lot.
Yeah.
But having those conversations with your kids about how imperfect and how hard it is was the best thing I did as a parent.
Mm-hmm.
And you have done that from the beginning. And it's one of the things I am the most proud of you for saying. It was a relief to sign them over to my husband because I didn't feel like I had the capacity. And for knowing that you felt that way, admitting it and signing them over, because how many people, and I've had people in my life that have done this, that have said, no, I can do it. And they couldn't.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And screwing your kids up that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you took a breath and realized, then you admitted, no, I know I'm imperfect, but I'm ready to do this. And you did it. And damn, I'm so proud of you. I mean, I can't even express to you. And then going through your own mental health journey, we are broken parents trying not to break our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not possible. And I just love you anyway.
Oh, thank you, Jen. I appreciate that. It's making me emotional.
It makes me emotional too, because parenting is so hard and we don't just like hug each other and help and admit it and be okay and not shame each other. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Yeah.
So your mental health journey has continued with your kids. Tell me about writing the book.
Well, the book idea finally came about like in 2019. You know, I had been, again, sitting there seeing before even the pandemic that there was this intersection, you know, this mental health. It was clear, you know, what had been happening in my own life and how these relationships and these interpersonal skills and all this stuff. And when I went backwards and through my whole professional career of all the things I loved and all the things I hated, you know, that I did, I thought, God, you know, I can't stand for this happening to other people without making them aware of that. So what can I do? Like, that's the, that's the part of me and my personality that comes from being like the hero child that I told my therapist when I started therapy is like, I never want to lose that. Like, let's work on everything else, but do not take that away from me because I love that part of me. And I think that that's an okay part that I can live with. And my therapist, I remember her telling me, she said, we're going to get you to the place where you want to be that person. You don't feel like you need to be that person. Mm-hmm. And so the idea for the book came from this want of, I want to now take everything that I have learned while doing One Broken Mom through my own self-reflection, from talking with people, from working with people that I've coached and seen and, you know, and dealt with in business. And I want to bring to them a business book that actually outlines what matters. And it's, you know, I did it with research. You know, I looked at like business failure statistics and, you know, why people say they close down businesses. I related it back to adult skills that we're supposed to develop and learn. How is it that we don't have these skills? Because we tend to shame everybody for not having adult skills. And it's like, hey, let's go back in time. Let's start talking about brain architecture and serve and return and the neurobiology of how our, you know, how we learn these things. And do it in a way that was compassionate and validating. And that's been one of the things that I've heard from people that have read the book. Like the first three chapters, I get these messages from people of like, they're crying because they feel seen. They feel like now it makes sense to them of why they're here and why it didn't work before for them. And, you know, because a lot of people that have read the book, this isn't their first business book that they've read. It's like the 10th one. And it's like the third business that they've tried and they've been unsuccessful. And here they are trying to figure it out. And now they know. And so the journey of the book was, this felt like the natural intersection that felt like the natural step on my journey of going from business failures to understanding what was happening in self-sabotage to now packaging and that bringing that back. And then the next leg of the journey, it's like the final step of the hero's journey of Joseph Campbell, which is you go through all the trials and the tribulations And then you have the message. And then the last part of that journey is the return home to share it with everybody. You know, the hero's journey doesn't end with vanquishing your demons. It actually ends with you sharing the fruits of your success and your labor. And that's where this book came from. Was to be able to do that. So, I mean, even if it's the last business book I write, like, I feel like it's the, you know, it is the right, but it won't be the last book I write. So,
No. I don't see that happening.
No,
my magic angel says, I want to end with what's the best piece of, or if you had one thing to tell someone and they haven't gotten your book yet, get her book. I put the link up. Get her book. If you had one thing to tell someone, and then I want to talk about the best way to find you, how to work with you, like your actual coaching one-on-one. I want you to dive into that. And so let's do that.
Okay. Well, so best piece of advice that I tell everybody is if you haven't ever done this yet, maybe you have because you listen and watch Jen all the time. But if you haven't, is that I tell everybody when I go in and I coach entrepreneurs and businesses and organizations is notice how often you're triggered during the day. Find out if you can identify the change in your body the moment something happens and learn to just push pause on that. That will be a game changer for there. That's like the starting point. You can't unpack, you can't change beliefs or behaviors or any of that until you notice how often your alarm system is setting itself off in response to something in the environment that you've seen, heard, smelled, or, you know, engaged with. Read an email, caused your heart to jump. Note that. Somebody says something and your chest tightens. Note that. That is like step number one, because a lot of people, and in fact, I did a talk yesterday, they sometimes know when they're triggered, but sometimes they don't. And then they realize that they kind of run the whole thing out and then go, man, I really wish I would have said something different or done something different. And so that's my advice. Now, how you can work with me. I have these ladders because I've been everywhere in my life. You know, my podcast, One Broken Mom, free advice, all kinds of free advice. So you can go binge that and not have to pay a dime for it. And I talk with people that I have had chances to learn from and engage with that write amazing books and have great stories and as well as advice to people. So there's step one. The Fearless Woman's Guide to Starting a Business. That's step two. It's easy. It's $16 on Amazon or wherever you like to buy books. The Audible is actually a bestseller for women in business. So go find that book and, you know, pay an extra, you know, couple bucks, less than $20, and you'll get all of that packaged up into that advice. And then you can come find me on my website at amiquercone.com. And I do offer coaching, but I'm not a trauma coach. I am a business coach that happens to have all this trauma-informed awareness. And so I work with individuals, moms starting their business here in the course of the pandemic going, screw this, I'm going to do this differently. I can work with you to teach you business skills you may not have, as well as how it works with who you are and how you show up in the world. Or I work with companies, you know, like training and coaching employees or the business leaders to understand, again, our relationship with our past and how it influences the way we show up today and how to be a messy, more vulnerable leader with our companies and the people that, you know, trust us to take care of them and to make sure that they can do what they need to do to take care of their families. And my pricing is actually online. So you can go see it. It's no big mystery on how much it costs to sign up with me. And I do a free discovery call. So there's like a 30-minute chat you and I can have to see if we're a good fit or not. But you know, the website's a good jumping off point. And if you're a business person and you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, go find me there. Because I do show up there every once in a while.
Yeah, I stalk you everywhere.
I have my other profiles and stuff, but I got to tell you, like, I'm hit or miss. Like, if I feel like it, I'll be on it. But you know,
yeah, I'm way hit or miss on LinkedIn. I mean, this is on LinkedIn, so I pulled LinkedIn up, and I'm like, no, I can't really even look at it. Yeah. But I'm with you on that. Okay, so everything is in the show notes. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you. I appreciate doing this again with you, Jen. It's good, nice to see you again after 2 years.
I know. We should do this not on a podcast interview.
Right. Grab something.
Thank you for investing your time with me on At a Crossroads with the Naked Podcaster. I'm so glad that you joined in the conversation. It would be amazing if you would share this episode with someone you think can benefit from it. All guests' links and audience freebies are available on the podcast page of momof18.com. This podcast was designed to help you in your struggles, so reach out and let me know what you enjoy and what you would like to see more of. It will support me on the journey to causing a worldwide epidemic of healing, gratitude, and joy. Until next time, remember, you're not alone in your struggle. Reach out to me on any platform. I love to connect. You are worth it to me.